Today on Enduring Word with David Guzik, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Santa Barbara.
It wasn't just believe. What did he say? Only believe. Isn't that powerful? Don't try to believe and be afraid at the same time. Get rid of your fear. Only believe. Don't try to believe and figure it out. Don't try to believe and make sense of the delay. No, stop trying to figure it. Just believe. Don't believe and work on the problem. Don't believe and not. No, just believe.
You cannot be afraid and have faith at the same time. Today, Pastor David will teach the story of two healings. The leader of the synagogue called Jesus because his daughter was dying. When he was on his way, Jesus is touched by a woman with a blood flow, and she gets healed. While Jesus ministered to this woman, the little girl died. Anger and despair entered her father's heart, but Jesus urges him not to be afraid, only to believe. We'll learn from both stories that having faith in Jesus will make all the difference. Now, here's Pastor David with part two of his message, Witness of Two Healings.
Jesus knew that healing virtue in some way had gone out of him and had touched someone needy. So who was it? I want to know who received this. And then did you see what it says in verse 47? The woman saw that she was not hidden. Now, I think especially if you combine this with the account as it's described in Mark chapter 5, verse 32. This is what Mark chapter 5, verse 32 says. Ready for this? It says, he looked around her to see who had done this thing. In other words, I believe that when Jesus said, who touched me? I think he was staring right at the woman. Wait, stop. Somebody touched me. What are you, crazy? No, he said, who touched me? And he's looking right at the woman when he says that. And what does she say? She says, busted. Everybody knows. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you for calling me out in front of everybody. Now, I have to say, don't you agree that this would be terribly embarrassing for this woman? I don't think there's any way around it. She was embarrassed. I don't know if maybe humiliate is too strong a word, but certainly so. This woman was embarrassed. She wanted to come, and if I'm using the words right, she wanted to come and sneak away a blessing, steal away a blessing, and remain anonymous. And Jesus blows everything by taking this woman who's now healed. You can just imagine how happy she is because she knows she's healed. But now Jesus has just mortified her in the presence of everybody. Called her out. There she is now. She's so embarrassed. Why would Jesus do this? Well, let me say this. I have to operate from the premise that Jesus, being full of love, full of grace, though he did embarrass her, he didn't do it in order to embarrass her. In other words, he's not just torturing her a little bit. There's a purpose. There's a good purpose. And I would say there's actually several good purposes why Jesus called her out. Here we go. Number one, Jesus did it so that she would know that she was healed. I know verse 47 says that she was healed immediately. But do you know what Jesus told her right here, right now? He looked at the woman. He said, your faith has healed you. I wonder, especially with the particular kind of affliction that this woman had, I wonder if not in an hour she would have wondered, am I healed or not? Oh my heavens, what's going to happen? I mean, this thing has kind of come and go at different times. Maybe it just would temporarily. Am I really healed or not? And all that stress, all that difficulty. No, but when she heard the pronouncement of Jesus the Messiah come to her and say, woman, you are healed. Your faith has healed you. She goes, well, yes, okay, I know that I'm healed now. That was one benefit that Jesus gained from sort of calling her out. Here's a second one. Jesus did it so that others would know that she was healed. I think I can say this, you know, tastefully enough, that this woman had an affliction that would normally be rather private. Other people wouldn't know whether she was afflicted or not afflicted. And with somebody in that kind of situation, it might be theoretically possible for somebody to just say, well, I'm all better now, when you're not. Jesus wanted everybody to know, this woman's healed. Hey, she's clean. You don't have to avoid her. You don't have to put yourself away from contact with her. She is healed. As a matter of fact, look what it says there in verse 37. It says, she declared to him in the presence of all the people that she had touched him. She explained it all, and Jesus wanted her to tell the story. Tell it, woman, not so that just I know that you healed, so that everybody around can hear that you are healed, in fact. But then Jesus said, and here's a third reason, Jesus did it so that she would know why she was healed. Why was she healed? Look at what he says in verse 48. Your faith has made you well. Remember I was talking about superstition before? Don't you think it would have been something a little bit incomplete if the woman actually thought that it was her touching of Jesus' garment that healed her? And she said, woman, I know you touched the hem of my garment. That's fine. But you know what? That's not what really healed you. It wasn't the tactile touch of your fingers. It was your faith that healed you. And I want you to get that straight. I want you to have your faith be a little bit less superstitious and a little bit more in the living God. Your faith has made you well. Here's a fourth reason. Jesus did not want this woman to think, or perhaps to fear, that she had stolen a blessing. Jesus didn't want it to where this woman could never look him again in the eye because he was afraid that she might have stole something from him. No, no, no. He wanted her to know that she received it by faith and to be confident in that. And by the way, as well, Jesus did it as well so that a particular onlooker could see it and be impressed with her faith. Who have we just completely forgotten about in all this? Jairus and his daughter. I mean, this woman, the story of the woman is so engaging. We just forget about Jairus. Let me tell you, Jairus didn't forget about Jairus. He's sitting there thinking, can this go any slower? Please, lady, can we move it along? Jesus, she's healed. Can we get to my house? I mean, you can just imagine how Jairus is just dying 1,000 deaths inside. But right there in front of him, Jesus gives him reason to believe. It's almost as if, and I don't mean to be flippant about this, but it's almost Jesus gives Jairus a little wink. And he says, if I can do this for her, I can minister to your daughter as well. It was for Jairus's faith. But here's another one. And I think this is really precious. This would be my last one. Six total reasons. I don't know if you've been counting, but here's number six. Maybe it seemed like 16 to you, but it's really only number six. Jesus did this because he had something to say to this woman that, as far as I can tell, at least as it's recorded in the Gospels, that he never said to any other woman. Jesus looked her in the eyes and he said to her, daughter. As far as we know in the scriptures, Jesus never called another woman daughter in this way. He called her forth to give her a special name of relationship and tenderness. I love you, he was saying. You're like a daughter to me. Now look, I think this is so beautiful, so powerful, but it's so instructive because I will tell you this. Not only is it true that we need to reach out to Jesus with the hand of faith, but it's also true that there are times when being a faithful follower of Jesus Christ will mean that you're embarrassed in front of other people. Matter of fact, it seems like there's times when Jesus deliberately engineers your embarrassment. Now, what do we make of times like that? I would just say this. Jesus isn't doing it for the sake of the embarrassment. He's doing it because there are other things he wants to accomplish as well. So don't be afraid of it. God meant this to be nothing but blessing for this woman. And in fact, it was. But then again, we think, poor Jairus. All this time, as I said before, he's dying 1,000 deaths as his daughter literally is dying. Verse 49. While he was still speaking, so the words are still coming out of the mouth of Jesus. While he was still speaking, someone came from the ruler of the synagogue's house saying to him, and you can only imagine the bitterness and the spite with which these words were spoken. He said, your daughter is dead. Don't trouble the teacher. I mean, you can almost imagine him giving Jesus' eyes of fire when he looked at Jesus. And, you know, he wasted enough time with this wonderful theological discussion with the woman. You know, Jesus, you could have gone to my house and taken care of the daughter and then gone back and done whatever you want to with this woman. This woman's had her problem for 12 years. Another half hour is not going to matter. Don't trouble the teacher any longer. But notice this. It says, Verse 50, but when Jesus heard it, he answered him saying, and I imagine Jesus just looking into Jairus' face. There's tears streaming down his face. He's almost beside himself. He's hardly holding it together. Jesus looks him in the eye and he says, do not be afraid, only believe and she will be made well. Now, how can you hear those words when your daughter just died? But Jesus called Jairus to hear it, to hope against hope, to receive it right then at that moment. Well, Jesus gave Jairus two things to do. Did you see that there? It's in verse 50. First, he says, do not be afraid. I'll be honest, those words sound cruel to a man who just heard that his daughter died. It almost sounds like this, and I'm not saying Jesus said, but I'm just saying it's in this direction that Jesus kind of said to him, hey, get over it. You can't say that. But Jesus looked at him and said, do not be afraid. But you see, Jesus knew something, that fear and faith don't go together. I don't know if they're opposites, but if they're not, it's pretty close. Don't be afraid. And then did you see what he says there next? It's beautiful. The second command, it wasn't just believe. What did he say? Only believe. Isn't that powerful? Don't try to believe and be afraid at the same time. Get rid of your fear. Only believe. Don't try to believe and figure it out. Don't try to believe and make sense of the delay. No, stop trying to figure it. Just believe. Don't believe and work on the problem. Don't believe and just believe. Just believe that I am who I say I am. Just believe that I can do what you know I can do. Just believe that the same power that just healed this woman, I'm going to go to your house and look at your daughter. And again, verse 50, only believe and she will be made well. At that moment, before we go into verse 51, Jairus had a choice. He could believe the words of Jesus, or he could not. And I just want you to know, in many ways, it was far easier to doubt the words of Jesus. My daughter's dead. She's been sick a long time. Jesus is too late. I know that dead people are dead, and they just don't go around alive again. On and on. All that told Jairus, forget it. The one thing he had opposing all of that was Jesus' promise. Don't be afraid, only believe, and she'll be made well. Verse 51. When he came into the house, okay, I can't get this scene out of my mind. Can you imagine how the tone of the crowd changed? I mean, when they're on their way originally to Jairus' house, everybody's excited. It's like, he's going to save the ruler of the synagogue's daughter. He's going to save the daughter. Oh, it's wonderful. Jairus' daughter. He's going to save Jairus' daughter. When they find out that she's dead, it's like all the air is out of the balloon. But they trudge. They make their. Now people just want to know what's going to happen. When he came into the house, verse 51, he permitted no one to go in except Peter, James, and John, and the father and the mother of the girl. Now all wept and mourned for her, but he said, do not weep, for she's not dead, but sleeping. And they ridiculed him, knowing that she was dead. But he put them all outside, took her by the hand, and called, saying, little girl, arise. Then her spirit returned and she arose immediately, and he commanded that she be given something to eat. And her parents were astonished, but he charged them to tell no one what had happened. So Jesus gets to the house. He goes, okay, small house, guys. Only three of you can come in. Peter, James, and John, you guys come in with me. Now, we often think, oh, wow, these were the special favorites of Jesus. I don't know. Maybe they had a special thing with Jesus. Isn't it just as likely that like a school teacher looks over the class and she goes, okay, what three kids do I really need to keep my eye on? Who do I need to keep close to me? Peter, James, John, you, come with me. I can't leave you out there by yourself. It could have been that just as well. But anyway, he goes in with those and the father and mother. Everybody's weeping. Everybody's mourning. And I don't need to go into it with great depth. But in those days, it was considered appropriate to hire professional mourners. And boom, as soon as people heard that she was dead, the professional mourners were on the scene. And they're making all a to-do and they're wailing and they're weeping. And we would look, that's so insincere, but it was just considered normal and cultural in that context. Everybody was doing it. And so, oh, loud mourning in Jesus. Everybody's weeping. Everybody's mourning, but the shallowness of the professional mourners was displayed. How quickly they went from mourning to scorning. And they ridiculed Jesus because Jesus said, she's not dead, she's only sleeping. They turned and ridiculed him. I gotta say, just that idea of these people sneering at Jesus and mocking him and ridiculing him. Whenever I think about it, it always hits me. I always think of how often Jesus was mocked and ridiculed. You know, it's a painful thing to be made fun of. Jesus experienced it a lot. Do people sometimes mock you for your values, for who you want to be as a Christian man or a Christian woman? Or sometimes you made the object of scorn? Let me tell you, Jesus endured it first. And I can think of no greater, more terrible example than when Jesus hung on the cross. Do you realize that as Jesus hung on the cross to pay the penalty for our sins, as he stood there as our substitute, receiving upon himself our sin and guilt, as the Father judged it in him, as Jesus hung there on the cross performing the most holy act of sacrificial love that this earth or the universe has ever seen, as he hung upon that cross, they mocked him. They made fun of him. They thought it was something to laugh about. It wasn't enough for the religious leaders to say, okay, we won, he lost, and walk away. No, they had to mock him to his face. Now that was the pinnacle of it. That was the extremity of it. But we see it even here. They mocked him. And probably, even more today than in the time of Jesus, we live in an age of mockery and ridicule. We live in a time when people find it so easy to sneer and snark against anything that seems or claims to be good. It's everywhere, isn't it? I read something really remarkable by a preacher that I've been reading as I make my way through Luke. His name is Morrison, and he was a Scottish preacher. He said this, I should like to say also to those who are tempted to see only the ridiculous side of things that in perhaps the whole gamut of character, there is nothing quite so dangerous as that. When we take to ridiculing all that is best and worthiest in others, by that very habit, we destroy the power of believing what is worthiest in ourselves. I'm just trying to turn a little red light of awareness on. And look, I'm not saying that we should be all glum and that we should never have fun and never make clever remarks because it's funny and I enjoy it as much as the next character. But look, we just got to be careful, don't we? That we don't live our life mocking everything that's good. Looking for every, you know, funny side of something holy. It's just a danger in our modern age. You see, Jesus said, she's not dead, but sleeping. They mocked him. What did Jesus do? Look at it there in verse 44. It says, he put them all outside. Get out, Jesus said. You're going to mock? You're going to look at the holy things of God? You're going to be confronted in the presence of the power of God? And you think it's something to mock and sneer at? Get out. I'm not going to nuke you. I'm not going to destroy you. I'm not going to wipe you off the face of the earth. No, 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 no. But you know what? You're not going to be around or see any of the great things that I do. Get out. You have no place here. Again, let me quote Morrison. He says, it was not a caprice that when Jesus was ridiculed, he turned the mockers out of the miracle chamber. That is what the Almighty always does when men and women take themselves to mocking. He shuts the door on them so that they cannot see the miracles with which the universe is teeming. And they miss out on the best because in their blind folly, they have laughed the giver of the best to scorn. So let's just watch it. Again, I'm not trying to teach something overboard to you here. I'm just trying to communicate that it can go overboard in our society, this attraction to mockery. Let's get to the good part. Verse 54, Jesus says to her, little girl, arise. Now, Can't you imagine Peter, James, or John tapping Jesus on the shoulder? Jesus, she's dead. She can't hear you. But you know what? God can speak to the dead as if they're living. And he can bring life to the dead just by the calling sound of his voice. And that's exactly what he did with this little girl. Little girl, arise. She rose up. She became alive again. She was resuscitated, not resurrected, but resuscitated. And what did Jesus do? I like it. Verse 55, it says, he commanded that something be given her to eat. I never considered this before. One commentator said that Jesus did this for the sake of the mother, because the mother was probably so shocked that Jesus said, look, you're going to have a stroke, lady, if I don't give you something to go get her something to eat. And said, okay, good, good. I can prepare a meal or something. You can just imagine the glory and the power of this scene. Verse 56 says it well. Her parents were astonished. Isn't it beautiful? Jesus didn't fail Jairus, and he didn't fail the woman who needed healing. You know what I love about this story? When you talk about the woman with the issue of blood, you forget all about Jairus. When you talk about Jairus and his daughter, you forget all about the woman who had the issue of blood. But Jesus remembered them both, and he didn't fail either one. And isn't it beautiful how actually each of the stories intertwine? How old was Jairus' daughter? 12. How long had the woman been afflicted? 12 years. Jairus had 12 years of sunshine that were about to be extinguished. The woman had 12 years of agony that seemed hopeless to be healed. Now, Jairus, here's a contrast. Jairus was an important man, a ruler of the synagogue. What about the woman? The woman was a nobody. Do you realize? We don't even know her name. An important man and a nobody. Jesus met both their needs. Jairus was probably wealthy because he was an important man. The woman was poor because she had spent all of her money on doctors. Jairus came publicly. The woman came secretly. Jairus thought that Jesus would have to do a lot to heal his daughter. Jesus, come to my house and do this. That's what you got to do for my daughter to be healed. The woman didn't think Jesus had to do anything. Jesus, you just stand there and I'll touch your garment and I'll be healed. Jesus responded to the woman immediately. But with Jairus, it was a deliberately chosen delay before he ministered to Jairus' need. Jairus' daughter was healed secretly in a room where only a few people were. The woman was healed publicly, and Jesus wanted everybody to see it and know it. But each of them were, in a special way, daughters. Here we go. Jairus, his daughter was healed, and this woman that Jesus looked upon, and he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you whole. Let's just close with this idea. Isn't it beautiful how Jesus knows how to respond to each individual need? You know, sometimes when I look at the human race, I'm astonished at how different we all are. I look at my own children and I'm astonished how different they are. But then other times I look at the mass of humanity and I'm struck with how alike we are. Whether you think we're alike or different at a particular point, Jesus knows how to meet each individual need. He knows how to speak to where you're at right here tonight. And the man who's fully God and fully man, the man who did the great work on the cross for us, the same one, he comes and he says, I will minister to you and meet your need where you're at. Just reach out to me in real faith. Don't just make casual contact. Or how about this? Don't be afraid, only believe.
Thanks so much for joining us today for this edition of Enduring Word Radio. Over the years in Christian media, we've seen all sorts of misrepresentations about supporting ministries. Everything from give your last dollar to if you don't give, God's work won't be done. These sorts of manipulations are not biblical, and they do not represent God's heart for giving. Here at Enduring Word Radio, we want to run fast and far from these sorts of misrepresentations. That said, it's also important for us to be faithful to share with you the ongoing financial needs that we do have. Enduring Word Radio is heard all over the United States. The program that you listen to today was professionally produced, and purchasing time on some radio stations comes with a cost. So we want to be sure to at least inform you and ask that you seek the Lord about supporting Enduring Word Radio. There's a secure option to give right on the homepage of enduringword.com. You can give a one-time gift or partner with us on a monthly basis. Again, that secure option to support Enduring Word Radio is available at enduringword.com. In closing, our thoughts on ministry is where God guides, God provides. God is faithful, and He will continue to provide for Enduring Word Radio. Again, thanks so much for joining us today for Enduring Word Radio with Pastor David Buzik. It's our hope and prayer that today's message has been a blessing to you. Until next time, may God bless you and keep you.